Russia's attack on Ukraine is more than just a military operation. There's also an information war. The Russian government is pushing out propaganda and false information about their actions in Ukraine in an attempt to cover up or justify the attacks. The Biden administration tried to combat that misinformation last week when they held a private briefing for a few dozen social media influencers in the U.S. to give them more accurate info about the conflict to share with their followers. The Washington Post obtained a recording of that briefing, which started with an introduction from White House Director of Digital Strategy, Rob Flaherty.
Obviously, we value the work you all are doing informing your followers the ongoing events, and we recognize this is a critically important avenue in the way that the American public is finding out about the latest. So we wanted to make sure you had the latest information from us from an authoritative source. We're here to answer your questions and give you a quick overview.
We're learning more about what misinformation is out there, how it spreads, and the role social media plays. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have trouble knowing what to believe, what to share coming out of Ukraine? Or do you go for credible information? Do you see misinformation popping up on your various social media feeds? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Joshua Tucker is a professor of politics at New York University. He's director of the Jordan Center for the Advanced Study of Russia and co-director of the Center for Social Media and Politics at NYU. Josh, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Jen Schrady is an assistant professor of sociology at the Paris Institute of Political Studies. She's author of the book, The Revolution That Wasn't, How Digital Activism Favors Conservatives. Jen, thanks for coming on with us today.
Happy to be here.
Well, both of you have been watching the spread of political related misinformation online and through social media. First, your overall thoughts. Let's start with you, Jen. What are you seeing? What kind of things are you watching for in the flow of mis and disinformation?
It's really spectacular, not only the amount of disinformation that's coming out over the war, but the media coverage of it as well. Not just us talking about it here, but the hyper-focus, as many have called this, a so-called TikTok war to try to counteract Russian disinformation. But what's really interesting is how this type of propaganda or disinformation really is nothing new, right? If we think about how propaganda has been used in previous wars by multiple sides. And the introduction of the Biden private conference calling in influencers. And of course, there was a Saturday Night Live skit about that as well. But, you know, if we really think about, again, how propaganda has been used, and celebrities, right? Katharine Hepburn, Betty Davis during World War II, even Disney characters, et cetera. And so we're seeing this as a way to counteract what's happening in Russia, which is pretty profound, the amount of disinformation that continues despite cutting off social media that many Russians rely on.
Josh, I think people have looked at social media as something new when it comes to, I think, the rate at which misinformation can spread. Do you see changes in the way that the media, that, say, other governments like the United States government, is trying to keep up with them, get out ahead of them, and try to counter them?
Sure. Yeah. I think one of the most interesting things about this current conflict is as much as we all sort of jump immediately to disinformation, and there is a ton of disinformation out there that's emanating from the Russian state authorities around the war. We've also, however, in the course of this conflict, seen the power of social media to actually spread information as well. If we go back to the days right before the invasion, the Russian government was essentially pushing out three narratives about why this invasion was justified. One of those narratives was that the Ukrainians were ruled by Nazis and drug addicts, a particularly egregious statement for a country with a Jewish president, and that these people were completely unpopular, and that as soon as Russia marched in the ground, troops would lay down their weapons and would greet them as liberators. There was also a story that was being put out as well about there being a genocide in the eastern part of the country where Russian speakers were being killed. we saw a technique that's known as pre-bunking. There's been research that's been done on this at the micro level, looking at this in labs, where you expose people to potential disinformation before they encounter it in the wild. And that's kind of what the US government tried to do by get out in front of this and say, look, the Russians are going to claim X, they're going to say they're doing Y, and then they're going to go ahead and do Z. And one of the things that's been kind of, really interesting about this is the fact that those narratives that I talked to you about that were getting so much play in the run-up to the war, you don't really hear those anymore. Now, we can talk about sort of new disinformation narratives that have emerged since then, but this kind of pre-bunking strategy, I think, on the part of the Biden administration by releasing some of this intelligence information, I think was remarkably effective. And it was also augmented by the fact that we had all these images coming out of Ukraine so quickly. So Jen talked about a lot of things, I think, that were similar to conflicts that took place decades ago or even centuries ago. But one thing that's different now is just how fast information flows from the battlefield to the rest of the world. And that makes it harder to sustain some of these particular disinformation narratives, such as that the Ukrainian troops would just fold and lay down their arms.
Jen, I know there's a lot of focus on, I guess, top-down propaganda from Putin and his closest followers. I know in your book, you make the case that a lot of information obviously is coming from maybe everyday people or organized groups of people. How much do you focus here on the top-down approach from, say, Putin and his followers to everyday people, a bottom-up type movement of social information?
Absolutely. There's so much hyper-focus on, as you said, the top-down politicians or even the platforms, pointing fingers at Putin or even Zuckerberg, right? Which are obviously really key. But what I found in my research is that really building on decades of other communication research, that really people on the ground, grassroots activists on every side are really a key part of any kind of information ecosystem. I did my research in the US where, even before Trump, and certainly into his presidency, there was a tremendous amount of grassroots, kind of mainstream conservatives, far right, even very far right preppers who were really engaged and kept this kind of really ideological information going. And, seeing reports coming out of Russia where people are outside of Russia are trying to reach their relatives and family members. And there's a lot of talk of how people on the ground in Russia as well are sharing information, not only on these larger platforms, but also specifically on Telegram and other ways that people are sharing information that really kind of digs into local communities, right? Whether it's local religious groups or community groups. And I think that's what's really missing. Sometimes we have this idea that disinformation is kind of injecting us or injecting people with information and that we're all just robots following whatever we hear. But the reality is that audiences are active and engaged, and we really need to understand how people on the ground are engaging with this information rather than thinking it'll simply stop by cutting off some of these major platforms.
We're talking about misinformation, Russia and Ukraine, and Jen Schrady is with us from the Paris Institute of Political Studies, Josh Tucker from New York University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you trust social media influencers to be credible sources? Do you agree with the Biden administration's idea to reach out to some of those influencers? What are you seeing when it comes to the spread of information, misinformation online in social media, your own social media feeds coming from Russia and the invasion of Ukraine? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your observations or questions. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation on Russian misinformation in Ukraine and on social media. Our guests today are New York University politics professor Josh Tucker and Paris Institute of Political Studies professor Jen Schrady. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, what you are seeing coming through your social media feed, anything striking you as inauthentic, suspicious. 800-642-1234 is the number if you'd like to join. That's 800-642-1234. Josh, this strategy from the White House of briefing TikTok influencers in particular, what do you think of that idea?
So I think it's part and parcel of thinking about disinformation in this conflict in one of three ways, right? We need to think about disinformation campaigns that are targeting the Russian population. We want to think about disinformation campaigns that are targeting the Ukrainian population, which we're going to see more and more of as the war drags on. And we think about disinformation campaigns that are targeting people in the rest of the world. So obviously, when the Biden campaign is trying to talk to TikTok influencers, this is, you know, possibly trying to reach into the Russian consciousness here, but this is mainly something that's focused on this larger question of how the sort of broader world perceives the support for the perceives the war and thinks about what the West's response should be here. So I think it's clever on the part of the Biden administration, if not inviting a little bit of mockery here, as Jen noted with the SNL skit that appeared on this. But the reality is that now people get news in a variety of different ways. And we know that whereas some people still tend to get, lots of people get news from TV, lots of people get news from Facebook, there is also a growing constituency for these kind of short form videos as a source of news. And the growth in the use of TikTok has been just exponential, right? I was looking at my notes, my lecture notes, this fall, and last year I had written, I can't believe there are 100 million people using TikTok already. And then this year when I had to update it, I had to update that to 1 billion people. Wow. So as Jen noted, right, if you want to reach public opinion, and if you think in the course that over the longer term, sustaining public support for the costly steps that are being taken by countries in the West right now in terms of the economic cost they're going to bear from some of these sanctions, which is the major tool that's being wielded here, building up public support for the need to take these sanctions is kind of important. And if you want to reach the public, there are a variety of different tools one can use to try to reach the public. And I think assuming that if you go only on TV, you're going to reach everybody is a mistake in the current day and era. So I give them credit for doing it, even though it's probably, even though it opens them up to a little bit of mockery.
Jen, do you have thoughts for the poor social media user who's bombarded with information and dis and misinformation whenever they go to their feed, potentially? How are we supposed to sort things out when we're just sitting down to see what's up with our friends' kittens?
Yes, as one of my students noted that, you know, they're getting exactly the kitten TikToks and then a report about the war, very meaningful, and then a makeup tutorial right after that, right? So it's tricky. The other interesting comments, a variety of comments that I've found from a number of my students, it'd be interesting to study this, is there, and these are students who are really engaged in politics, they do not want to share any information about what's happening in Ukraine because they're so worried about disinformation that they're hesitating. And if we think about really one of the goals of disinformation and Russia, that all along has been one of the outcomes and, you know, presumably the goals is to really not only put out disinformation, but really shake things up enough that people are really questioning what's happening. And so, as you mentioned, it is really challenging to try to weed through everything. More and more people are just getting their news from a variety of feeds, and knowing what to trust and what not to trust is really important. So it was very heartening to hear a lot of my students talk about how much they're now going back to traditional news outlets because of this problem with disinformation. They are certainly struck by the emotional grab of a lot of the TikTok and other videos that are coming out, but to really understand the broader context, they're going to the news media. And that's really one of the dangers of just thinking about these short form videos as a way to kind of position the war, is that we're left without a broader sense of what's happening. And we also risk the war being more presented to the broader world as a form of entertainment rather than important political news to really react to.
Josh, we have just a minute left. What are you watching for next in this global misinformation battle?
Can I just make a quick, I want to just make a quick follow-up to the point that Jen made a second ago, because you asked at the beginning of the hour, you know, what can readers do? And one of the most interesting new projects that we have going on in our research lab has been looking at the effect of what happens when people search for information online, when they're trying to figure out whether a news story is true or not. And what we found is that for false news stories, stories that are fake, when people search for news online, they're actually more likely to believe those false news stories. If they sort of follow up by like putting the headline of that false news story into Google and searching for it. And it's precisely because some of these more obscure false stories, we think, are not covered by mainstream news as much. And so what they find is other false news in there. So I just want to really emphasize to your listeners the point Jen made, that if you are going to try to check the veracity of news, simply Googling a headline or Googling a question might bring you back other false news information. So going back to sort of tried and true news sources that you know you can trust ahead of time, well-known mainstream news outlets, is a much safer strategy than simply Googling it. So I would just sort of add that as a kind of answer to your question at the beginning of the hour, but just as a follow-up to the point Jen made.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to both of our guests, Joshua Tucker, professor of politics at New York University, Jen Schrady, assistant professor of sociology at the Paris Institute of Political Studies, with us for a look at Russian information during the invasion of Ukraine.